is actually my fourth time at Perimeter. The first time being all the way back in 2006 when I came here for a high school program. I'm not sure if it's still going, ISSYP.
I think after you visit me.
Oh, I see. Okay. Makes sense.
Roger, do you know?
That's online.
Oh, okay. Great. Yeah, so then after that, I came here as a visiting undergrad and grad student, and here I am again. So I really appreciate Perimeter's hospitality and the opportunities that it enables. So today I'll be talking about some interesting connections between entanglement, topological states, and phase transitions. So this is a part of a brief outline for the talk. In the first part, I'll introduce a new technique called bulk entanglement spectrum. And I'll use it to try to convince you that many topological states secretly have a topological phase transition within them. Okay. And then I'll demonstrate this explicitly using the Chern insulator as an example. So this is work done with my advisor, Liang Fu, and details can be found in that paper. In the second part of the talk, I'll talk about using tensor networks to implement this technique of bulk entanglement spectrum. And again, I'll first present a general formalism for how it works, and then I'll explicitly demonstrate it with the spin-1 chain. So in particular, we find that the AKLT matrix product state secretly has some six vertex models hidden within it. And this is work done with Liang and Xiaoliang Qi in this publication. So first, some motivation for these works. Basically, we've seen in the past few decades that the ground state wave function is very, very powerful and contains a lot of information and intuition, right? So one need only look at how many wave functions are named after people. So of course, we have a famous example of BCS wave function, which encapsulates superconductivity phenomenon very nicely. And more recently, we have Laughlin wave function for fractional quantum Hall states, Kitaev's Tor code, for example, and Wren-Plaquette model, both for Z2 topologically ordered states. So yeah, so the wave function by itself already contains a remarkable amount of information. Now, in these latter three examples, we have a different type of wave function of topological ground states. And these still contain a lot of information, but it's a lot more subtle to get this information. And that's because one of the almost defining features of these states is that there's no local order parameter, right? So where is the information then? Well, it's encoded in more global properties, such as topological invariance, or in the case of topological order, ground state degeneracy. And more recently, we found that entanglement measures, such as entanglement entropy, entanglement spectrum, are both very useful in probing these topological states. So with this motivation, we were interested in how much can we push this program of using entanglement to unearth information from topological states. So the main point of this talk, as I've already said, is that many topologically non-trivial ground states actually contain information about a topological phase transition from the non-trivial phase to trivial phase. And this information is extracted using a new extensive partition for the entanglement spectrum. And the ideal goal for this program is to study some interesting phase transitions, perhaps from symmetry-protected topological states to trivial states, for example. Okay, so let me begin with some basics to make sure everyone's on the same page. So what is the entanglement spectrum? Well, if we start out with a wave function psi here, and we partition the system into a left half and a right half, then we can trace out the right half at which we get from which we get a reduced density matrix of rho A. And it turns out to be convenient to think of this density matrix as a thermal density matrix associated with some Hamiltonian HA, which is called the entanglement Hamiltonian. And the spectrum of this is called the entanglement spectrum. So what is the meaning of this entanglement spectrum? Well, there's something called the Schmidt decomposition, which allows us to write the original wave function psi as a linear combination of pieces from A and B weighted by some coefficients. And these epsilon i's here in the coefficients are none other than the entanglement spectrum. And these wave functions psi ia are none other than the eigenstates of this entanglement Hamiltonian. So basically, this entanglement spectrum provides a hierarchy of states in A, depending on how important the eigenstates are in making up the original wave function psi. So in particular, we'll be interested in the ground state of HA. So the ground state of HA has the lowest entanglement energy, and the lowest entanglement energy means that this coefficient is largest, right? So the ground state of HA, or psi naught, psi zero A, will be the most important state in A in making up the original state psi. Okay. So we'll be interested in this entanglement ground state. All right, so that's entanglement spectrum. Now, why should we care about the spectrum? Well, in 2008, Lee and Haldane found that if one begins with a topological state and does this left-right partition of tracing out the right half, for example, then remarkably, the entanglement spectrum from this cut has the same structure as the excitation spectrum of the topological state, had this cut been some physical boundary, right? So we all know that the quantum Hall state, for example, if you put it on a system with boundary, then it has these gapless edge states running around the boundary, right? But what Lee and Haldane showed was that even if you start out with a quantum Hall state on a system without boundary, if you just mathematically trace out part of it, for example, B here, then the resulting entanglement spectrum already reflects that gapless edge state. So it's as if this tracing out procedure were, in some sense, real.
But I guess it's more than that, right? I mean, systems don't have any boundary states. Because as soon as you're protecting them, for example, it's broken by a surface.
Yeah, yeah, that's right, that's right. Yeah, so in some sense, the entanglement spectrum is even more powerful than just looking at the excitation spectrum, right? Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so so since then, many works have followed supporting this correspondence between entanglement spectrum and the actual edge excitations. So this is good. A left-right partition allows the entanglement spectrum to tell you, to give you information about the edge state spectrum. But what if we want to learn something about the bulk of the system, not just the edge physics? Then we want a different type of partition, in particular an extensive partition, such as a checkerboard cut, where you trace out an array of white squares on a chessboard, for example. So this type of partition, as I've said, is extensive in all directions, not just one, like the left-right partition. And after performing this type of partition, the entanglement Hamiltonian is truly a bulk Hamiltonian, right? It's of the same dimensionality as the original system. And similarly, the bulk entanglement spectrum and the ground state of the entanglement Hamiltonian are all honest to goodness, bulk quantities, right? So the question is, what do we learn about the bulk? And now I'll try to convince you that we actually learn about a phase transition through this cut. So so here's like the main part of the general argument. So let's start out with a topologically non-trivial wave function psi. Yeah, you'll see. In this slide, we'll consider different types of extensive partition And it does make a difference, yeah. So let's start out with a topological non-trivial state psi. In your minds, you can think of this at, as, say, just true number one wave function, okay? So let's first consider a partition where we don't trace out anything, okay? Then A is just our whole system and B is nothing, right? So in this case, the entanglement spectrum is fully gapped, right? Every state has entanglement energy infinity, except for one state, which is the original ground state psi. Okay. So here in blue, I've shown a schematic of the entanglement spectrum. And CA equals one, I use to indicate that the ground state of the entanglement Hamiltonian is non-trivial. Okay. Because the ground state here is just the original state psi, which is non-trivial. Okay? So this limit we all understand. Now, what if we trace out an array of isolated islands? Okay. Then in this case, all we do is just bring down some states from infinity, and they'll end up with finite entanglement energy. Okay. So we basically have some dispersion in our entanglement spectrum now. But because all we're doing is tracing out a small, an array of very isolated islands, by isolated, I mean they're spaced apart much larger than the correlation length of the ground state, for example. So then we don't expect to change the topology of the ground state of the entanglement Hamiltonian. No. It's fine if there are edges going around the white square. As long as the white squares are isolated from each other, the separation need be a lot bigger than the correlation length. Then why am I not seeing low energy? It's because the low energy stuff in the entanglement spectrum comes up from the global edge state when all these little edge states come together. Okay. But basically all these, let me go to another limit first, and then I'll try to clarify what I said. So basically, this other limit is when I've traced out almost everything, right, and my remaining system is just these small patches of gray, okay. And in this case, the remaining system is some direct product of these gray islands, right? And I cannot have any topological order on this remaining subsystem, right? So at this point, my entanglement ground state must be trivial. Okay. So basically, back to your question. So after I trace out the wide region here, I'll still have, you're right, I still may have edge states running around, right? But you can just think of all that's going on in each island as some atom with a bunch of excited states, right? Just some finite number of degrees of freedom on each gray island, right? And then the total ground state is just some direct product of these set of finite energy levels, right? Yeah. Right.
Then it's as if you're doing a trace in which, like, the trace in that subsystem is fully connected with one square.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. No, you wouldn't. Because actually, here and here, remember that the entanglement spectrum is the same whether or not you trace out A or you trace out B, right? So here, this is A, this is B. And here, this is A, this is B, right? So these two should actually have the same entanglement spectrum. The energy levels are the same, but the nature of the wave functions is different, right? One is defined on A, one's defined on B.
So I guess the question is whether the gap in the entanglement spectrum is fixed at one end, and that is defined in the white box or the separation
of the white box. Okay, so you're asking how this gap scales with the dimension of each box and the separation of the box.
Yeah, you should scale with the dimension of the box.
Let me think. Yeah, I think that's right. Right.
Yes.
Okay. Right.
So it's important that you have a gap that the regions of your fluid that you're tracing out. It's basically like you're gapping out the edge. Like, so every time you're tracing something out, you effectively think of the picture as if it's trivial and topological, right? So there is some edge there. But if you make the region small enough, the gap 1/L could be really big. The L is the size of white region. So you're not seeing that line.
Okay, I mean, I guess what I was saying is that even if the white patches are big enough that there are edge states going around, you can always take the separation between them to be a lot larger to still define a gap in your entanglement spectrum.
Okay, I didn't agree with
that. Okay, yeah, maybe we can talk about it later then. All right.
Physically, if you really cut out that large region,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, right. Right, but there's more than one length scale in this cut, right? There's a separation too, right? So I'm saying that separation is the more important length scale in defining the gap of the entanglement spectrum. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure, I agree. Right. Right. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, but the key is that this is an extensive partition where you're tracing out an array, right? So this is extra length scale. And yeah, we can talk about it later if you want. Okay, but okay, so regardless, so as you can see, as we trace out more and more from the ground state, then the ground state of the entanglement Hamiltonian actually undergoes a phase transition from non-trivial to trivial. So basically tuning the geometry of the partition realizes a topological phase transition. Yeah.
Can you elaborate on what's the nature of this Chern number?
Yeah, sure. That's right. So later I'll present an example in which we do this cut for free fermion systems. Okay. So then the Chern number is just the usual Chern number associated with the Berry curvature of the bands. So it's just your it's just the usual definition of Chern number.
But it's attached to one of these levels.
Yeah, it's attached to the ground state of the entanglement Hamiltonian, right?
This is kind of like percolation.
Right? Yeah, yeah, right. That's a more intuitive way of looking at this, which I'll briefly mention also, right? So, as you probably guess, the phase transition should occur at a symmetric partition, in which A and B are related by some kind of symmetry. And I'll try to justify this a little bit more rigorously, but as you can see, there are still some holes in the argument. So first, let me present a conjecture, which unfortunately we haven't proven yet, but it's kind of interesting. So the conjecture is as follows. Well, let's assume that we do an extensive partition and the resulting entanglement spectrum is gapped. Okay. So I've shown here two copies of the entanglement spectrum as just a reflection of the Schmidt decomposition. Okay. So in other words, psi is composed of psi naught A, psi naught B, weighted by the Boltzmann weight with that energy, plus psi 1A, psi 1B, weighted by this, etc. Okay. So the conjecture is that if you look at the direct product between psi 0a, psi 0b, then this direct product has the same topological order as the original ground state, psi. Okay. So more concisely, psi is approximately, in the topological sense, this direct product. So a hand waving or a hockey stick waving way of justifying this conjecture is that basically when we have a gap in this entanglement spectrum, then we can slowly, we can gradually move up all these excited states to infinity, at which point none of them participate in the ground state wave function, right? So in the process of moving these states up to infinity, we deform the state psi into the state psi naught, right? Without changing the topology of that state.
How can we do this?
Yeah, that's one way. The other way is maybe imaginary time evolution with the entanglement Hamiltonian, okay? So in other words, if you evolve an imaginary time with HA cross HB, then you might then you're basically giving more and more weight to the ground state, right? And right, but you might have to do this for infinite time, which is bad. Yeah, yeah, right. Because like there's some, you know, because basically two states are in the same phase if there's some local unitary connecting them, right? So yeah, adiabatically, right? So that's, I mean, this is why it's still a conjecture, but the intuition is that we might be able to do something similar using the entanglement Hamiltonian as our local, for our local unitary. So I think if yeah, yeah, right. It satisfies like a volume law, in fact. But the thing is that I think right. No. I think it. Yeah, yeah, and that's a sick limit.
Yeah, that's when you want to take negative gap really big, right? So it's not clear that Hamiltonian
evolves
to become the local. So if you take the gap off to the stuff from the end,
right?
Then it is going towards the projector, which is hardly
normal.
So
no. But I mean, the process by which we're going to that limit is using the entanglement Hamiltonian. Right, which we believe to be local. Right.
Well, okay, so in the thick limit it's not, right? In the limit which is the
projector. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you have an argument for why coming away from a limit really
becomes local? So for free fermion systems at least, the entanglement Hamiltonian is related to this correlation matrix for your free fermion ground state, right? Mm-hmm. Which, and that correlation matrix decays exponentially because you have a finite gap above your ground state, right? So I think when you, so I think the entanglement Hamiltonian should inherit some properties of that exponentially decaying tail of the correlation function. Yeah. Any extensive partition, right? Right. I mean, yeah, you're right. We might need some extra qualifiers to rule out some sick cases, but yeah, if you have a counterexample, please let me know. Yeah, right. I mean, we've tested this as much as we could with the churn insulator example, which I'll tell you about. But we can't prove it, right? Okay. So back to the purpose of the conjecture. So we want to establish that at symmetric extensive partitions, the entanglement spectrum is gapless, right? So we'll also need one extra assumption, that the original topological state is irreducible in the sense that we can't write it as a product state of two identically topologically ordered states. Okay. So for example, a churn number one state is irreducible, right? Because we can't split churn number one into churn number one halves, right? But a churn number two state is reducible. Okay. So we need an extra assumption that the original state is irreducible in this sense.
For what?
To establish the gaplessness of the entanglement spectrum at symmetric partitions, which I'll now argue for. So assume, for the sake of contradiction, that the spectrum is gapped at a symmetric partition. Then by the conjecture I just mentioned, psi is in the same, has the same topological order as this product state, right? But psi naught A and psi naught B have the same topological order because they're related by symmetry. We're at a symmetric partition. But this contradicts the fact that psi is irreducible. So by contradiction, the spectrum must be gapless. Okay, so all this is just a quasi-formal justification of what you would suspect intuitively, that a symmetric partition, the gap closes, and you have a phase transition. Okay, so now let me be slightly more concrete and talk about the churn insulator example. Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's reducible. Like, yeah, for example, if you have two sublattices, each with churn number one, then your full thing has churn number two, right? So the churn number two state is reducible in the sense you mentioned. Right, so we don't want to consider that. For those cases, the entanglement spectrum at the symmetric partition may be gapped, right? Okay, so as you all probably have realized at some point in career, it's nice to consider free fermion systems. In this case, because the entanglement Hamiltonian is also a free fermion system. For the case of the churn insulator, we can actually rigorously establish that the symmetric extensive partitions of odd churn number ground states give you gapless entanglement spectrum. And the proof of this is a little bit involved, and it's based on the churn number as an obstruction against continuous choice of phase in the Brillouin zone. But if you're curious for this more formal direction, please take a look at our supplementary material. But now I want to give you the most intuitive argument for this work, which is what Dima had already alluded to earlier. So basically, let's consider a partition of the churn insulator, which is asymmetric, such as this one. Then thanks to Lee and Haldane, we know that the entanglement spectrum upon tracing out the wide regions will reflect these edge states going around the wide regions, right? And in this case, the entanglement spectrum will be gapped because these edge states are all decoupled from each other. They don't percolate through the system, right? However, if we consider a symmetric partition shown here, these edge states can now percolate throughout the whole system. And now the entanglement spectrum is gapless. So indeed, if we test this out numerically, we find that the entanglement spectrum for this symmetric partition is gapless, and it's linearly dispersing near the gamma point. So for those of you familiar with the Chalker-Coddington network model, this is basically an entanglement version of it. So this Chalker-Coddington network model describes the plateau transition between different filling factors. And basically, when the edge states percolate throughout the system, that's exactly the critical point between different plateaus. So as the network model predicts, and as we find here, the phase transition is described by a Dirac Hamiltonian. All right.
In this case, why do you say that the amount of time should be gapped?
Basically, in all right. So when these islands are a lot farther than the correlation length, the entanglement Hamiltonian should factorize as a direct product acting on individual islands. Each individual island. Okay, so
it's gapless, but it has a finite size correction.
Exactly. Right. So
when you multiply those.
Exactly. Right. So for example, in the numerics, we're always dealing with some finite size in which each white square is like an 8x8 block, or a 20x20 block, right? So there already is some gap at that scale, right? So we're just coupling together these systems with small gaps.
So this small gap is the one, the final gap is going to be proportional to this small gap. When you multiply all these gaps, all these spectra together?
Yeah.
You get first.
Okay. Right.
Lowest level for everyone, and then first except the state. It's lowest level for everyone except for one of these.
Yeah, right.
You have degeneracy. In this case, four whole degeneracy.
Yeah, right.
So you still have a situation where if these islands were leaking, well, the gap is related to the size of the island.
That's right. Okay. Sorry. All right. So the separation between the islands is only important to make the entanglement Hamiltonian local. Right. No. But sorry. But the correlations induced by finite separation, basically, okay, you can think of it as some kind of like hopping term between the islands, right? Which will lead to dispersion of these individual energy levels. So,
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Yeah. In that case, the gap is determined by the white length scale, right? Yeah. I agree with that.
Could be arbitrarily small. I mean, the larger.
That could be arbitrarily small, right?
But still, it's fine.
Right. Yeah.
Probably not. There are cases where constructed the edge is more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
In turn one, you just assume where you have other gap stuff in the edge, there's another scale in the problem. So take your example, but add another set of left and right movers in the edge.
Uh-huh.
Which gap?
Okay.
Now what would happen in your percolation transition? Would you see the universality classes, the entanglement transition change?
What, so you're saying in addition to these gapless edge states,
yeah.
Add in some non-protected states.
Yeah. And which in the limit that these white regions grow,
right.
With, those will also be able to.
No, but they're gapped though, right?
Yeah,
say the hopping was stronger between.
Yeah, you might be able to. Yeah, you could probably cook up some model where that's the case.
Then what would the nature of your phase transition change?
Yeah, but it would be some non-generic point, right? I mean, basically this in this argument, you can start out with any generic topologically ordered ground state, right? And for the generic state, you'll get the correct universality class just based on this universal physics. But yeah, I mean, I can't rule out some fine-tuned examples, right? I can't rule out what you said, or I can't rule out first-order phase transitions, things like that. But this is the fundamental physics going on.
So is that suggesting that other bulk transitions out from this one phase? So we know that you can do there's universal quantum at the edge.
Yeah.
And then you know you can bring down other stuff like you or not, but there's still like one net right in the
right? Yes.
But that doesn't affect the bulk transition, and I could like physically try to drive this turn one.
Right.
Zero, I will always get. So I'm just asking if like this suggests there are other kinds of bulk phase transitions.
No, I don't think so. I think they're just whatever you get there might just be an artifact of this procedure. Yeah, I don't think there are any new bulk things. Yeah.
Does this percolation picture work for the toric flow, for example, where you don't have necessarily edge?
Okay, so for genuinely topologically ordered states, yeah. We still don't have a good answer to this. And that's because at the beginning, it's not even clear what state to take to cut, right? So you have this fourfold degeneracy on a torus, and so like what linear combination of states to take, does it matter? I at least am still pretty confused about topologically ordered states, so I don't have a good answer for that. Yeah. No. Within a small island, it might be non-local. But between islands, between the bigger scale, it's local. Yeah. Fractional quantum Hall? Maybe. I mean, there are edge states, right?
Yeah.
So.
But that was like the non-trivial test of the fact.
Yeah, that's right. So entanglement works for that. It might work in this case too. I don't know. No, yeah. Okay. All right. So, yeah. Let me just point out an alternative way to realize phase transition. So, some of you might be thinking, this phase transition I get by tuning the geometry is kind of unusual, in that the Hilbert space of my system is changing, right, as more and more is cut out. So that's why we're motivated to come up with alternative ways to tune phase transition on a fixed Hilbert space. And this is where entanglement temperature comes in. So you've already seen this from a previous slide. This is the route to phase transition that I illustrated. And now the alternative procedure goes as follows. So now let's concentrate on a fixed Hilbert space being the gray region at the symmetric partition. Okay. So this will be our Hilbert space at the end of the day. Okay. But for this procedure, we need to consider an earlier partition, an asymmetric partition. Okay. And at this point, we want to change the entanglement temperature. Okay. So we want to rescale the entanglement Hamiltonian. And then we're normalized so that trace rho prime is still one. Okay. So for example, let's consider lowering the entanglement temperature. Then by lowering the temperature, we're essentially favoring the ground state, which is non-trivial in this case, right? So after lowering the temperature, we can continue tracing out degrees of freedom to reach this symmetric partition. Okay, So after fiddling with the temperature here, we no longer expect the spectrum to be gapless at this symmetric partition. In fact, we expect it to be gapped, because by favoring the ground state at an earlier point, we've missed this transition. We're slightly on this side, the non-trivial side. Okay. Similarly, by raising the entanglement temperature, we disfavor the non-trivial ground state. And then when we continue tracing out, we expect to overshoot the critical point and land on the trivial side. Okay. So by tuning T prime from less than 1 to greater than 1, we realize a phase transition in this direction. So this phase transition is now defined on the fixed Hilbert space of the gray squares. And it's now a parameter of the temperature at an earlier partition. Okay. So we tried this out on the Chern insulator again. And indeed, when we lower the temperature at an asymmetric point, the entanglement spectrum at the symmetric partition is now gapped, and the ground state is non-trivial. So this is just an alternative way of realizing the phase transition in this procedure. Okay, so that's pretty much the main essence of the first part of the talk. I've shown how to realize a topological phase transition by tuning either the geometry of the partition or the entanglement temperature. So either going this way or going this way. And just to remind you, this is all derived from a single ground state only. So there's no need to fine tune any Hamiltonian to criticality as we would normally achieve the quantum phase transition. Yeah. I mean, you're asking, if I tune the temperature here, what does it mean in terms of my original state psi? I don't know what that would mean for the original state. I'm not sure. Right. But you're changing the density matrix, and then you can purify it back into an original state on the whole system, and then you're asking what has happened there, right? I mean, you probably just changed it, but it should still be in the same topological class. It's not clear whether there's a pure state that gives that. There's definitely a pure state that gives it. You can always purify it. That's right, yeah. Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So, do you have anything to say or conjecture about any relationship between the phase transition that you obtain here and the phase transition that you would obtain if you take the original system and change the Hamiltonian into a trivial phase?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a very good question. So you're basically asking what type of phase transition are we probing with this technique, and we're basically probing phase transitions of the type in which you add an external periodic potential to the system. So you're adding a perturbation that explicitly breaks the translation symmetry of the original problem. I mean, in this case, you can see it explicitly because we're partitioning the system, right? But for example, in the case of the Chern insulator, if you have like a quantum Hall state and you put some external periodic potential and you make that potential deep enough, then eventually you'll drive it into a trivial phase,
but
right?
Again, so this is periodic potential?
Yeah, exactly, right.
Meaning in this, you tell us story about this.
Right.
And so that's the type of phase condition based on percolation.
That's right, yeah. You're right in that we're not really probing generic topological phase transitions. We're probing those of this type of explicit breaking of translation symmetry. But for quantum Hall, it turns out to be, I mean, one of the most relevant ones, right? The plateau transitions, yeah. I think a colleague at MIT is working on this problem. I'm not sure what the status is, actually. But I think what he's doing is actually a random version of this. So instead of a fixed extensive partition, he's taking like a random extensive partition in which you trace out some region with some probability, and that mimics the role of disorder in the original system. So.
I was just gonna say, what about the original system?
Right, right.
Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Right, right.
Does your phase transition reflect that change?
That's a good question. I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, that's right. But right, and that's because you've broken the symmetry between A and B at an earlier partition, right? So at this asymmetric partition, A is the gray region, B is the white region, and by lowering the temperature, you favored the non-trivial state on the A region, right? So the symmetry between A and B is broken. Right. Yeah. 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 At this point, the gray and white regions are no longer symmetric because you've broken the symmetry at an earlier point. You no longer have symmetry when you've changed the temperature. Right. Let me move on to some more recent work that basically implements BES with tensor networks. This is work in this paper, and there have been similar works by these people also very recently. So I've shown you that we expect a phase transition from the BES at symmetric partitions. So in principle, this is fine, but in practice, how do I analyze that phase transition? How do I get the universality class? Things like that. So it turns out that tensor networks are very useful in this context and provide a nice graphical representation of what's going on. As you'll see, we end up with some pretty nice mappings between the quantum critical system expected from this partition to a classical partition function. Okay, so this is just a brief preview of this work. And using tensor networks also highlights the role of the edge states in mediating the phase transition. So for this audience, this background is not very necessary, but let me just go through it quickly. So this is a tensor with three indices, sigma, alpha, beta. So sigma is the physical index, and alpha, beta are virtual indices or auxiliary indices. And a matrix product state is simply just a contraction over all the virtual indices to give a physical wave function at the end of the day. So with this MPS, it's very easy to get the reduced density matrix, right? Because like say we wanted to trace out every other two sites from this MPS, then our reduced density matrix just looks like this, where these are the ones we've contracted over. Okay. So now the goal is to use tensor networks to get the universality class of the entanglement Hamiltonian, which we expect to be critical from after we do this extensive partition, right? So so it turns out to be very convenient to work with the partition function of the entanglement Hamiltonian. Okay, so this will be like the centerpiece of this work. So this partition function is just trace the negative beta HA, right? And in terms of the density matrix, that's just rho A to the beta, okay? So we're gonna wanna study this partition function at low temperature or as beta goes to infinity. So visually, this is easily achieved just by stacking our reduced density matrix rho A and contracting it as follows, and then taking the trace, right? So this is just trace rho A to the beta.
Yeah.
So assume beta is an integer too, right? So the virtue of this partition function is that since all degrees of freedom are contracted over, we can change perspective from the physical degrees of freedom to the virtual degrees of freedom, okay? So in particular, we'll want to evaluate this building block shown in blue here. Once we evaluate this building block, then we can evaluate this entire network. So let me demonstrate how this works for the spin one chain. So there's a symmetry protected topological phase called the Haldane phase of the spin one chain, which has the AKLT matrix product state as a representative. And I've just shown the tensor up there. So for this MPS, the physical degree of freedom is spin one, and the virtual degree of freedom is spin 1/2. So now we want to do an extensive partition and trace out every n spins, okay? So going back to that building block, we want to evaluate this thing where we have n columns traced over. And here these alpha, beta, gamma, delta are just spin 1/2 degrees of freedom, the virtual legs. So since we have an explicit form for these tensors, we can just directly evaluate this building block. So we want to think of this building block as first a transfer matrix acting on the alpha, beta degrees of freedom to give the gamma, delta degrees of freedom. So a transfer matrix acting on this level to give this level. And we find that this transfer matrix is basically some identity acting on this, plus a piece involving the projection of alpha beta onto a singlet state. Okay, so this is just direct evaluation of these tensors. So notice that for odd n, this projection operator favors the triplet, right? So this is a ferromagnetic interaction. Whereas for even n, we have anti-ferromagnetic interaction between these alpha and beta degrees of freedom. So for the rest of the talk, I'll be interested in the even n case, okay? So we can also take the large n limit. So in other words, we trace out n sites at a time and take n to infinity, in which case this transfer matrix reduces to an identity plus this piece involving the projector, which we can approximate as an exponential. So now that we have the building block, we can go back to our original tensor network to get the partition function. So we have structures like these, right? And we now know what each building block looks like. It's just some exponential for this projector. And different building blocks commute, but building blocks here and here have some overlap on where they act, and in general will not commute, right? But the thing is that this is close to the identity, so we can just use this approximation that product of exponentials is approximately the exponential of the sum. So from this, we get, using these approximations and large n limit, we can write down the partition function as trace e to the negative beta HA and get an effective entanglement Hamiltonian shown here. So yeah, basically I just have a projection operator of adjacent sites repeated throughout the system. And after a change of basis, I can just map this directly to a spin 1/2 Heisenberg chain. Okay. The effect of P, you mean? Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Small as a function of the block size n. Right, yes. Okay, so the upshot is that I've derived the effective entanglement Hamiltonian to be a spin 1/2 Heisenberg chain, which, as we all know, is critical. So this is for the large n limit. But it turns out that we can take another approach to get the universality class for any even n. So again, this is our partition function with this building block. But now instead of treating this as a transfer matrix going from this level to this level, we want to treat this as an interaction vertex between these four spin 1/2 or 2-level degrees of freedom. Basically, we do this replacement throughout the entire lattice, and we end up with this nicer looking graph here. So we have a square lattice with 2 degrees of freedom on each link. And we have, for every vertex, we have a different weight for the different configurations of these four spins. So in other words, the partition function is now just some stat mech model in 2D. And again, we have the explicit form of the tensors, so we can explicitly get the form of this stat mech model. And we see that for in the case of AKLT, this maps to 6 vertex models of this type. So in other words, this 6 vertex model is some loop model in which you only have non-zero weights for this type of connections in your graph. And this one comes with some parameter lambda. So 6 vertex models of these form turn out to be mappable to 4 state POTS models, for which the universality class is also understood to be SE2 level 1. And yeah, thanks to Senthil for pointing out this correspondence. So at the end of the day, we've taken the AKLT matrix product state and dug out this critical 6 vertex model from it using the extensive partition. So this is an illustration of using tensor networks for
thinking of the model alone or the solution also?
Sorry?
You said that you dug out the model.
Right. No. Here we're just borrowing from really old work by probably Baxter on Baxter and Affleck.
But you have reduced density matrices. Do they contain some information about the wave function of, for example, critical
Heisenberg
chain? You said that you reduced
That's right.
And
right.
Which is solvable by Bethe
answer. Yeah.
So can you get those kind of information from your approach? Information about the wave function.
About the critical theory.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's probably harder. I mean, you could do that numerically, obviously. Yeah, I guess here we're just lazy and made use of just correspondences, right? But yeah, I mean, later I'll talk about like maybe some numerical approaches of using this to actually study the critical theory independently of known facts. Okay, so right. Yeah, yeah. So, uh, So Gifri already asked this question. Right. So exactly what phase transition are we probing for the spin one chain? Well, Affleck and Haldane found that the spontaneous dimerization of the Haldane chain is described by level 2 SE2 Western Meter Witten. However, if you don't demand translation invariance, so if you add terms that explicitly break translation symmetry to the Hamiltonian, then these type of phase transitions are described by level 1 SE2. So it's precisely these types without translation invariance that we're probing with entanglement spectrum. Because again, we're kind of by hand breaking translation invariance and coupling the spin 1/2 edge states to each other to drive the critical point.
But isn't, you're also saying the Heisenberg chain.
Yeah.
Isn't that SE2 level 2?
Level 1.
Heisenberg chain,
right. Right. So, yeah, so we can generalize this beyond AKLT to matrix bodic states with lower symmetry. Right? AKLT has the full SE2 symmetry, which is why we get the fully symmetric Heisenberg spin 1/2 chain. But if you break down the AKLT symmetry to lower symmetry, for example, let me just say that you can break down the symmetry, and then the critical theory will also have lower symmetry. Like, for example, we can map to the XYZ model instead of the XXX model. But this is not a very important point. Okay, so I think my time's almost up, so let me just leave you with a rhyme that you can recite to your kids to put them to sleep, maybe. So basically, in short, I've given you a new recipe for achieving a phase transition by tuning the geometry of an extensive partition or by tuning the entanglement temperature. And let me just mention some interesting directions that some other people have been pursuing with this. So these people have been interested in using entanglement measures from these extensive partitions as a form of topological invariance. So, for example, of looking at the Chern number of the entanglement ground state of the entanglement Hamiltonian as a topological invariant. So some directions I'm currently interested in are applying this tensor network approach to understand new phase transitions, say from these symmetry protected topological phases to trivial states. So I've shown you an example involving the Haldane phase in 1D, and in principle we can generalize this to all SPTs in 1D. But in 2D, these SPTs also have nice tensor network state representations, and there are a lot of there's still a lot to be explored in phase transitions. For example, between this non-trivial Z2 paramagnet or this Levin-Gu wave function to a trivial state. What is the universality class of these type of phase transitions? So here, tensor networks might provide the adequate machinery to analyze these. But again, 2D to 3D. So we have 2D quantum critical to 3D classical. This is a bit messier. So even after we get the tensor network describing some Stabek model in 3D, we will probably need numerical techniques such as Monte Carlo or tensor renormalization to further analyze the critical theory. Because we don't expect to have 6 vertex models falling out, as in the case of AKLT. And another direction I'm kind of interested in is using this extensive partition as a form of renormalization for the topological phase. So I've argued that, you know, when you trace out a small grid of islands, the entanglement ground state is still in the same universality class as the original one. So in principle, if you iterate, then you can define your topological phase on an arbitrarily sparse system. That's it. I guess Halloween is coming up. So I urge you to keep the extensive partition in mind. Yeah, thanks for your attention. I think you only get one type. Why would you expect to get more?
No, because you said you classify different base transition. You only get only one answer.
Oh, sorry. I just mean from different SBTs.
Yeah, but a given SBT.
Yeah, that one should only give you one because we're only probing one type of base transition, given by this breaking of translation symmetry.
Yeah. No so this.
We'd have to consider a different extensive partition, yeah. Like maybe like particle partition or something. So not a real space partition, right? Yeah, that might be interesting to think about.
Or in case space.
Yeah, maybe, right.